How did a broke single mom who'd been fired from Denny's go on to become America's most sought-after real estate investor? Hold on to your seats as you are about to go on a wild ride that results in you being a superstar. Dwan Van Twyberg, a.k.a. Dwanderful, is about to blow your mind. The most wonderful real estate podcast ever promises to be your go-to podcast for everything that life has to offer. You are entering the Dwanderful Zone. Everybody, welcome to the most wonderful real estate podcast ever. I'm your host, Dwan Van Twyberg. I'm America's most sought after real estate investor, and I am so excited that you are here today. As you can see, I have a guest, so this would be my wicked smart man. We're going to talk to Brandon today. We're going to find out a little bit about him, and we're going to see what's happening. Now, the motto at Dwanderful is people before profits. So if that's something that sounds right to you and fits in with what you think, then I'm your girl, it's your time, and you're on the right podcast today. You can opt in at Dwanderful, D-W-A-N-D-E-R-F-U-L, Dwan and Wonderful, made a new word. You can opt in at Dwanderful, and you'll get a free ebook, Flip Your Way to a Fortune. And that being said, Brandon, how are you today, honey?
I'm fantastic. It's an honor. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I like you. I just like to interview people and talk to people and find out what people are always about. So I'm always excited to meet somebody new.
The bar's been set. I hope that I can fulfill it and hit it.
Hey, you got to keep up with all this like wonderfulness.
I'll try anything once, but I'm going to give it a shot. I think I can do it, but let's see what happens today.
I think you can too. So we actually start off by having a toast. So do you have something nearby to drink?
I do. I got my toast.
Is that water?
It is water.
Okay. I have water too. So cheers.
Cheers.
Everyone at home, grab a drink. And then everybody take a deep breath. And put away all the things that are bugging you and put them out of your mind and have some fun with me and Brandon for a few minutes. Okay, so Mr. Brandon, we just dive right in. So what we like for you to do is tell us who you are in like two sentences. Tell me what you do and tell us how to get a hold of you. And then I'm going to ask you some questions and we're going to sort of loop back to see how you got to be who you are right now.
Yeah. So my name is Brandon Cobb. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. Our fund and firm primarily focuses on building entry level housing in the Nashville, Tennessee area and build to rent communities.
I like that. So, and how do people get a hold of you?
You can reach us by our website, hbgcapital.net. It's pronounced Harry Bob Gary Capital.net.
That's easy enough to remember. HGB.net. So you guys work on building entry-level housing.
That's right. Yeah, we're focused on the suburban areas of Nashville where people can't get what seems to be is the most undersupplied real estate asset right now, which is entry-level housing. We see a huge opportunity there. Everyone's talking about the lack of affordable housing. Yep. Everything's getting more expensive. And so that's kind of to your point, people before profits. We feel like if we can just satisfy what the people want, then the profits are going to come.
Yeah. See, that's how I feel too. You know, I think it was Zig Ziglar, one of those guys that said, if you always help people get what they want, you'll eventually get what it is that you want.
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember exactly. I should have looked up before I quoted it. But it's true. If you just help people out, put the people and ahead of all the stuff, the money will come.
Yep. 100%.
So I'm like that. I've been doing deals for, gosh darn, like 33 years now. And I'm just like, whatever I need to do to help my people out, that's what I'm going to do. So, all right. So you do entry-level housing. So tell me, we want to know what's your deal. So what made you, first of all, how old are you?
32.
Oh, you're a puppy. You're younger than all my children. My son's 32, so right about there. So what were you doing back when you were like 10, 12, 13, like that preteen kind of Brandon? What were you doing? Where were you living? What was happening in your life back then?
Preteen Brandon was in Memphis, Tennessee. We lived in a suburb called Collierville, and I spent my weekends going around refereeing soccer, believe it or not. So I had a job since I've been really, really young. And, you know, looking back, it was kind of funny. You know, I joke around that I was working while all my friends were chasing ice cream trucks. But yep. Getting into trouble, always sneaking out when I shouldn't have been sneaking out. We like to get out of the house, and we weren't even doing anything bad, which is the funny thing. We just like to sneak out of the house for the sake of like doing stuff that we weren't supposed to be doing. So I was giving my mom a really tough time. I was that problem child. I was extremely rebellious, and probably owe her more than I'll ever be able to give back for those years, my preteen and teen years for that. So I spent a lot of my preteen and teen years probably torturing my parents.
Oh my God. That is so funny. But you know, this session, I call this session Inside the Minds of Today's Millionaires. And every single person that I've interviewed over the last 2 years, all of them were doing something. When they were like 12, 13, 14, they were already earning money. Like, well, their friends were off doing whatever, like you were doing soccer, and like you were doing jobs and stuff. And I find that interesting because I have never interviewed someone. It's like, oh, I was just a bum. I was hanging out, like smoking weed in the backyard, waiting until I got out of high school. Like everybody was already doing something.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, I look back, it's a great question because I love how unscripted this stuff is. It makes you think, and I'm like, God, you know, what was I doing? And so you really got to think back of those stories of what was going on. I had my fair share of mischief, don't get me wrong, but thinking back, I was really surprised by how soon I started, you know, working and filling my weekends up with productive stuff. You know, yeah. I was a big fan of reading. I had started reading a lot of, you know, biographies of millionaires and billionaires. Some of them caught on, some didn't. But, you know, it was kind of the first teasing stages of what would eventually develop into lifelong patterns for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It is. I find that most people that are successful today, even if they didn't plan to be successful, they were doing something. Of course, yeah, a little mischief here and there. I was not one who not to sneak out of the house as well, except I didn't do it for fun. I did it to go to parties. So I was sneaking out and getting myself in trouble, but I never got caught. I think I never got caught. If I got caught, my parents never called me out on it, but can't imagine that they don't somewhere along the line figure out that I used to do that.
Oh, so, I got caught and I was, let's just say I was, we'll leave it at this. I was so dumb back then that I ended up jumping out of a two-story window to get out of the house. And my mom heard the car crank on and comes and opens the front door, starts screaming at me to get back in. And so I come back in, tell which my legs, I go upstairs, I go to bed. And I'm laying in bed the next morning. They come up and they have a talk with me. And the first thing my dad says is, all the doors were locked. How the hell were you going to get back in the house? I hadn't thought that far ahead. So give you an idea how cognitively active I was back then. It wasn't very much.
That is so funny. So you're like a teen and then you're going through school. And what did you decide? Like you get out of high school. What did you think you were going to do? What were your plans? What were you planning on being?
Yeah, at first I wanted to be a physical therapist. I knew that I was intrinsically motivated. I really liked the idea of helping people. I was majoring in kinesiology, so enjoyed the sciences. I liked anything where there was like a formula to it. Anything that was super subjective, like I compared to like art, I was not a very good artist. I need like formulas and things. That's why I always did really good in math. Oh, you just follow this formula, boom, it produces the outcome. If you stay within these lanes, you're going to be good to go. So thought I wanted to do that until I spent a summer shadowing a PT my freshman year. And thank God that I did, because I realized that 50% of their time is sitting in the same spot, filling out paperwork. And oh my gosh, I thought that I was just going to be bored to tears. So while this was going on, I also spent my summers of college making money doing door-to-door sales. So I was that guy going in the areas. I was selling alarm contracts. If you've ever had somebody knock on your door and try to sell you an alarm system, that was me. That's what I did.
And
that was
my first.
Yeah, ADT. Yep, ADT Home Protection. That was my first taste of sales, and it was 100% commission. That's where I cut my teeth. That's where I learned a lot of skills about rejection, how to overcome objections, how to manage and keep a positive attitude in the face of constant rejection, and ultimately learned, hey, you can really kill what you eat and hard work pays off. That was the first time, because I would come back and I would write a check for my entire year's rent for what I made over the summer, plus have some extra spending money set up. So that was my first taste of sales. So I knew I kind of liked sales, and I knew I wanted to be in healthcare, and I knew I didn't want to be in an office all day. So after that point, I realized, after talking with my uncle who had worked for Medtronic, and I always looked up to my uncle. He was a guy that was super inspiring, always funny. Everyone was always sitting around the table listening to his stories, and he sold spinal medical devices for Medtronic. And so after a few conversations with him, I was like, I want to do medical device sales. So ended up setting on that path right after high school.
That's so cool that you did that. I actually know Medtronic, believe it or not. My mom has a pain pump in, you know, inside of her abdominal area. She has a pain pump. So I have learned so much about Medtronic and what they do. It's like, wow, it's really interesting.
It's fascinating. Very, very fascinating industry.
It is fascinating. So where along the way did you like, you know what? I think I want to get into real estate. So you did your soccer and did your jobs and did your physical therapy, realized not for you. So I think sales, I think a lot of times people like us, we are in sales. Like, we know that we're in sales. Some people are like, oh no, I could never be in sales. But it's like, but if you're an agent or an investor or you're building houses for people, you are in sales already. And I just think a lot of people don't put a lot of time and effort into learning more about sales and scripts and what to say and what to do, because they don't recognize that that's actually what job they're in.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's selling, whether it's your children trying to convince them to go to bed, or it's your spouse trying to win them onto an idea that you have that they maybe haven't been so privy to, or maybe it's a customer that you're trying to get pushed over the edge. Everybody is selling.
That's what I say all my works. I'm like, every one of you in this room, whether you think it or not, you're in sales. So where did the real estate come in? How old were you about then?
I was 26, 27 years old. Now, the funny thing is, I never aspired to get into real estate. If you told me 7 years ago that we would be building and inventing these communities and serving a niche that just needs to be served in this time of unaffordability when it comes to residential single family housing, I'd have looked at you like you had 8 or 9 heads. Would have never believed you. I was working for a company doing sports medicine, medical device products. So knees and shoulders, ended up getting, that was my dream job. And unlike a lot of people, I actually loved my job. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I was a guy in his mid-20s. I was wearing scrubs every single day. I was in the OR. I was teaching staff how to use my product. I was rubbing shoulders with surgeons. I thought I was the hottest thing out of the box. I really thought that I loved what I did. And one day my boss said, hey, you know, meet me at Starbucks. It was Friday. I had probably the best day you could have as a medical device rep. So I got called in to do a power equipment trial, was sitting in the OR. The rep had some disposable products that weren't power related. Those disposable products like didn't work out very well. And he actually ended up ticking that doctor off. And the doctor looked at me and was like, hey, I want to look at your stuff next time. I mean, it was a total diss to the guy in the room. I mean, it was perfect. A power trial turns into some implant business. Holy crap, that's a great day. So I show up to Starbucks, and he and I are sitting across the table, kind of similar to you and I right now over on Zoom. And I get ready to start telling him how excited I was about what had happened and give him the good news. And he fires me.
Oh, no. Like, totally not expected.
I was shocked. I think for 3 hours, like, I didn't know what to think about it. And, you know, it took a while for me to collect my thoughts and realize like what in the world just happened. But, you know, from that experience, I learned that you can be as loyal as you want to a company. You can work as many hours. You can either, you know, perform, because all I could think about was like the awards that he had given me for like my sales performance. And at the end of the day, the company has to do whatever's best for the company. And you really don't have anybody looking out for your financial security except you. So that changed my mind. I learned that nobody was going to look out for my financial security but me. And so that started me on this kind of serial entrepreneur path. I started multiple companies. Most of them failed, and real estate just happened to be the one that took off first.
That's funny. I have been fired from several jobs myself. And each time I was thinking like, oh man, they're probably going to give me a raise. Like, you know, I'm so great. And then I would get fired. I was like, well, how are you firing me? Like, that's one you have here. That's it. But you know what? That's a good lesson because it makes you realize you could put in 30 years with another company and still just get let go because at the end of the day, you're a number. You know,
That's
and
the
when you work for
unfortunate thing about it.
yourself, you're number one.
Yeah, and it's no hard feelings, right? I actually still love and have a relationship with my past boss. He taught me so much, and that set
Yeah,
the
of course.
groundwork for my success in real estate and my other ventures. But it's no hard feelings, right? The company has to do what's best with the company. I feel like a
I
lot of
get
people get let go and they have these ill feelings and they hold a grudge. It's not personal.
it's not. It's not. It's funny. If we talk about this when you're interviewing me, I've been fired from really a huge amount of places in my 20s. But I look back on that, like, you know what? I really was independent and I was outspoken and I needed to be an entrepreneur back then. But that never had crossed my mind to work for myself. So I was always trying to tell people how they could run their company better. If they just listened to me, they could do a better job. And a lot of presidents of companies don't appreciate that.
No, they don't.
It's all good because it got me doing my own thing. So I love that part about it. So now you're getting into real estate. And you're like, okay, there's a million things you can do in real estate. People can build, you have storage units, you have commercial, multi-unit, you can flip houses, you can be a REIT, you have a landlord, you'd be a landlord. Where in your mind were you like, I like the idea of building entry-level houses? Because that's not someplace most people step first. That's like you've been doing it forever and you're tired of this and you want to do something new.
Well, we definitely didn't start out inventing neighborhoods. That was a graduation process that we just pivoted with the market, learned and listened and grew. There's no way I could have done starting out what we're doing today. I started with something that I didn't know that I was going to start with, which was I need to figure out what it is first. And the way I figured that out was I started going to a lot of meetups, meetup.com.
Yeah.
Looking on the internet, I was going to real estate
Nashville
conferences and I
RIA,
was
they have a
just
great
trying to.
media group there. Nashville RIA, give them a plug. Hey, you guys.
Nashville RIA, huge organization there. I was going to all those meetings. And so I didn't have a specific thing in mind. I was just looking for a mentor. I knew that if I really wanted to ramp up my success quick, I needed to find somebody who already had their it thing going on and was looking to bring someone into the organization that was hungry. I didn't want to work for anybody, but I was looking for some kind of partnership. So this led me to meeting my now partner. We're still partners to this day. We're the only two that showed up to a meetup, immediately hit it off. You know, it was funny. I was talking about Colorado Springs earlier. That's what we talked about for the first 30 minutes was doing the incline, that really big hill in Colorado Springs, and he had
Yes.
done it. And we immediately had this connection. He was looking to get an operation up and running in Nashville, similar to what he had had in the Colorado Springs. I said, what do I have to lose? I just got fired a few weeks ago. Let's give it a shot and see what happens. So it turned into a mentorship program that has now eventually led into a partnership. We started wholesaling and flipping houses. The first deal we ever did, I lived an hour and a half from, and we ended up buying it. I sold pretty much all my retirement accounts to buy this piece of property, and we split it 50-50. We bought it, we flipped it, and it was sold 3 weeks before an ultimatum that I gave myself. So as I lost my job, I gave myself 6 months. I said, hey, look, just give this whole entrepreneur thing a shot for 6 months. If it doesn't work out, you can always go back and get a job. So I didn't immediately jump back in the job force. And so we ended up buying this house, driving an hour and a half every single day. I'm cruising in the car, 5 a.m. in the morning, like all excited. My car is full of Home Depot crap, right? I drive a RAV4, so not a truck. So all the pieces of trim and stuff are in like the front seat over my shoulders, right? My steering wheel is getting hit by like 2x4s and crap. It was a scene. It was really funny. And I had no clue.
That so much.
I had no clue what I was doing. I wasn't a contractor. I've never, like, I don't know which way to swing a hammer, but I'm willing to give it a shot. I mean, I did everything wrong. I hired contractors off Craigslist for that. I mean, I thought it actually went pretty well, given the extent we made about $30,000 off of it. I think it took us like 2.5 months to flip that property. And we just took that money and kept reinvesting it back in the business. I joke that if you've ever seen the movie Batman, where the Joker slides down the big pile of money and then turns around, deuces it with the gasoline and lights it on fire, that's what we were doing with marketing dollars and back in the business. So we just kept reinvesting all these profits. That $30,000, we turned into four or five more deals. I think we probably made a couple $100,000 from those deals. We just took that, we dumped it into marketing. We started hiring people for the first 3-4 years. We just reinvested all the profits back in the business. Now, at some point, you know, how did we get into, you know, inventing communities and residential single family housing?
You build the whole community, like you lay out the whole thing, the plot, the sewer, the plumbing, like you lay the whole, the streets, everything.
Everything. We rezone it. We take it through the whole rezone entitlement process. We put in all the roads, the infrastructure, and we'll even go vertical on it.
I love that. I want to do that at some point. I got to finish my town first. I'd like to build one just flat up off the ground.
It really is something spectacular when you are adding to a community and seeing it go to new heights. It's a lot of fun.
So tell me about your first community then, because I'm like, so this is something I would like to do.
Well, we had a development. So the way we got into it, we started transitioning from rehabbing and flipping houses. So we built a business up. We were doing about 30, 40 of those a year. And we had a house that basically had burned down, but the foundation was still good. And we could buy it for less than what the land was worth. So we said, well, why don't we just go ahead and tear down the framing and just frame on top of the foundation? And we did that, and that was our first new build. And the light bulb really went off when we built that home faster than we were rehabbing some of our full gut rehabs.
Yeah.
And we made 3 times as much money. And that was the light bulb we needed to say, we need to get into spec. So this led us to running around chasing all these like onesie twosie spec deals. And that it was great. We were able to really grow. We were able to really scale. It was fantastic. But we were so spread out all over the place. And new construction is a lot more expensive than rehabbing. It takes a lot more capital.
Yeah.
And so we were running out of our own money. So we had this good thing going on. We had the arm, the acquisition arm built where we could find all these off-market deals. We had no problem there. We had created an in-house construction company to help mitigate timelines, to help mitigate risks. And that really helped. And so at this point, that was how our company HBG Capital was born. And at that point, when we were able to raise outside investor funds and put them into these projects and pull all of our own funds out, that's when things really started to scale because we weren't limited by our own capital at that point.
Yeah.
Well, we noticed, God, dude, wouldn't it be easy instead of building 30 houses all over the place if we could just build them all in the same area?
Yeah, that's so great.
That would really take off. And so that's basically what led us to getting into doing these rezones and entitlement and putting the infrastructure and building the houses in place. Is we just show up to 1 or 2 or 3 spots as opposed to being spread out in like 10 to 20 different spots. So we started going around to all the local municipalities, meeting with the mayors, meeting with the planning commission. And our goal was not to just shove something down their throat. Yeah. We wanted them to tell us what the vision for the community was, what was lacking, what did the citizens want, what was needed. And then we would ask them, well, where do you want density? You know, where will you support apartments? Where will you support, rezones to higher density and residential? And so we started, you know, working in some counties in and around Nashville. And that's where we were able to really take off, is we reverse engineered what the city wanted and brought it to them. And let me tell you, we had some really surprised faces when we started doing that because they weren't used to developers acting that way.
Yeah, no, that I don't think anyone is used to that. Especially, you know, that's such a good point. I know because we bought 20 buildings in this little town. So our first thing was like, we met with some downtown people. It's like, well, what do you see happening with these buildings? And we start, we're doing a re-beautification. We're doing this. We're doing that. We've got money. We've got grants. We want, you know, this and that and that and that. We're like, oh, okay. Well, let's take what they want and what they'll pay for. That's what we're doing. And so it is really good that you went that way, because a lot of people will just go in and build what they want to build. And that might not really be right for that area or that community. Mm-hmm. And when you get them coming and telling you what they want or what they envision, what they see, then you build it. Next thing you know, you've got people lined up, all the city officials, the mayors, all the people like, hey, Brandon, what do you need next? What do you need next? What do you need next?
Yeah. And they'll refer people to you because the people on the planning commission, you know, the mayor, they know people and they want to help you at that point because you're helping them. Again, it's all centered around people. How can you give enough people what they want to get what you want?
That's so great. And you're young to be doing that. I mean, yeah, not that like you're young, because I mean, you're 32, but most of the people I meet that are doing that, they've been investing for decades and then they go there. I love the fact that you're kind of starting there, because you'll be able to make such an imprint. Any city that you choose to work in, they'll leave like an imprint.
Yes. Like I said, it's really fun seeing communities go to new heights and actually getting to imagine what it's going to look like. And then when it actually gets built, it really is surreal. It's probably similar to having a baby, because it takes a while. Like, you wonder what the baby's going to look like. You know, you play around with, oh, this is your eye color, this is my color, you know, putting it on paper and seeing it and doing all the work. You know, it's a labor of love, you know, working with the architects and the civil and everybody, you know, what's like a baby. And then seeing this thing get born, I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. Then you get to see it kind of grow up as you go by the areas and you continue to develop the areas. It really is a lot of fun.
So when you name these subdivisions that you're building?
We do. We get to name them, and sometimes
you
we get to
name
the
like
road.
Yourself, your kids, your family. Because
we do.
Name
we just
all of our buildings after our grandkids.
I love it. Yes, we do. We have a road. We just sold off a development, and the road was this. God bless all these people that live there and have to send the address to their friends when they are wondering when they come over. We put both of our last names on it. My partner calls me up and goes, "Hey, guess what? We got a road named after us." I was like, "Well, what's it called?" He goes, "Cobb Sadoff Way." And I was like,
"Holy cow.
That's not odd at all."
Cobb Sadoff Way?
Yeah, it's like Cobb Sadoff or Sadoff Cobb Way. It's basically both of our last names. It's the weirdest road name, but I can say I actually got two roads named after me now.
There you go. That's fun. I know, because people are like, "How did you come up with the idea for this building, that building?" I'm like, we just like went through our family tree and named things after people. Like, I don't know. It's kind of a neat way to honor people, you know?
Yeah, it really is. It's a great way to do that and leave a legacy.
Yeah, and I only found out a couple of years ago over there. I told you my family's from Crossville. Apparently, my grandfather was a really big builder, kind of back in this little area that was called Pomona, like a sort of like, I guess at the time would have been kind of like a holler. And I just found out a couple of years ago, my maiden name was Lowe, Lowe. And there's a whole road, Lowe Road. And my grandfather built every house on that road. And I was like, "No way." So I went driving up and down. I was like, "Oh my God, look at this. My famous little imprint is up and down this entire like 2 mile road." So it's kind of fun, you know, later and generations later, and your kids and your grandkids go, "Oh, that's my dad's road."
That's so funny. Yeah. If you go down to Panama City, there's a hotel. I don't know if it's still there. I think it is, called the Sandpiper. And like a mile or two down from that is a road called Cobb Road. And my great great grandfather was the first one to build a house there. So they named the road after him.
Yeah.
And all I could think is like, man, great granddad, couldn't you just bought a few acres on the beach?
And hung on to it.
Hung on to it.
Generation.
I mean, it's right there.
That's what I was like, "Grandpa, why did you just build all these houses and let other people buy them? Why did you just keep them on? Someone has to start the generational wealth. You had the chance right there." So, but that's okay. I'm starting. Yeah. So at least it's getting started somewhere. So what's your favorite band?
Oh man, my favorite band. It depends on what mood I'm in, but I've been listening to a lot of EDM lately, but some of the bands that I go back to are Blink-182. I love Nine Inch Nails. I love Rob Zombie. I'm a Marilyn Manson fan, and I really like Korn.
That's good. I like Blink-182. Yeah, Korn is like a little too hardcore for me, but the guy the lead singer of Korn is all saved now and major Christian, and he's so great to listen to him, and he's gone back and changed a lot of the words into his songs and stuff. It's like very cool. So we're gonna go Blink-182.
Okay.
You only get to name one.
But Blink-182.
I like Blink-182. I like all those bands really. I'm a big fan of like all music from bluegrass all the way to all the stuff at EDC. My daughter goes to all those things. So what about your food? What's your favorite food?
A green smoothie. I've got a proprietary recipe. I have it every day, and it is by far my favorite thing because I've been doing it every day for years.
Yeah, my husband makes beet juice every day. I'm telling you, it's to die for. I normally would never be like, ugh, beet juice, but I'm telling you, oh, God, it's so good. Every day I get up, I'm like, ah, give me my glass of juice.
I feel different. It gives me energy. I put organic kale, carrots, half an avocado, a scoop of collagen protein, a scoop of plant-based protein, so a little bit of Greek yogurt in it, and then I'll put like some frozen fruit, and like that is key. I think I'm gonna live forever if I keep.
You know, it's true because ours is sort of similar. Like it's like beets, carrots, celery, you know, all the stuff, frozen fruit and stuff. And people are like, "Ooh!" And I'm like, I'm telling you, once you get a flavor for it and you start drinking it, you feel healthier and you feel better. Yeah. The days I miss it, it's like, I didn't get my juice. My juice is going to help me live forever. I need my juice. So I'm like upset if I miss a day now. Once you get it and like that's your thing and you don't have it, you're like, I'm so bummed out all day. It's like, oh, I need my juice. My body didn't get the right start this morning.
I'm a health nut. I eat the same thing every day. I've been doing it for years. And every now and then I'll make an adjustment and I'll test it and see if I feel different. If I notice any differences, and if I do, then I keep whatever that is. And so I've adjusted my diet over the years to a certain very specific thing. And I pretty much eat the same thing every day and I feel fantastic. And the smoothie is a key part of that.
It is. The days that I don't do it now we even at the point now we have a separate suitcase. So when we travel, we pack in the Vitamix and all the stuff in a small little suitcase. And if we're going to go like, do a workshop for 4 days somewhere, I have a suitcase that's got my Vitamix and all my stuff that I need. And when I get there, I either order Instacart or go right to the store and get everything I need. People are like, you travel with that? I was like, well, it becomes when you make it to be part of your life, it's part of your life, whether you're home or someplace else or you're speaking or whatever. So once you make the decision to make this as part of my daily life, you make the adjustments because people are like, I can't believe you guys
non-negotiable.
It's like, but it's part of our daily life. We eat, we have this every single solitary day, especially if I'm speaking somewhere, you know, everyone gets together for drinks and people eat all kinds of crap all over because you're on the road and it's like, no, I got to have that shake, man. So we travel with the whole Vitamix, the whole thing. I got a special suitcase for all my stuff. I know people think we're crazy, but it's like, no, it's like you, once you do it every day, you can't miss.
Yeah. You're hauling around the portable pharmacy on all your trips.
I have my collagen. I have all my supplements. It's like now all this stuff is every day, no matter what, we don't miss any days. And it's part of what we do. So we just make, you know, you just make it part of what you do. So I love that about the what you do that because your health, you know, you're young. And I can tell you for a fact, when you get into your 60s, if you didn't take care of yourself in your 30s, you're going to be looking back going, oh, man, back when I was 10 foot tall and bulletproof, I should have taken better care of myself because you're going to need and appreciate that help when you get up in those 60s. I can attest to that. I was pretty rough on my body. I've got bad knees, got a bad hip, got this and this and this. It's like, should have been more careful. But it's okay. It's all good. Lived a good life. And pretty much you can fix anything now. So I don't care. What's your favorite part of day, Brandon? What's your favorite time? What's your favorite part of the day?
In the morning. I like my morning times. So I've been experimenting, trying to do something that I've never been able to do before, which is to wake up naturally between 4 and 5 a.m. I mean, it's just the crazy schedule and everything that's happened and the way my circadian rhythm is and my sleep patterns. It's really tough, but I finally broke and went into the discipline of going to bed around 8, 8:30, taking my melatonin. I created a wind down routine at night that helps me drop my body temperature, helps me relax my muscles, helps me get ready for bed. And I've been able to go to bed around 8:30 to 9:30, 10 o'clock, actually fall asleep, not just get in bed. And I've been waking up between like 4 and 5:30, and it is the most amazing thing ever. My body naturally wakes up. So I'm a big fan of the Whoop. I use the Whoop band. If I do have to get up early for something, absolutely, I use the haptic alarm. So it's just a gentle vibration. And it was a complete game changer because I'm not starting my day startled and an immediate anxiety, which is what that is when you wake up with an alarm. I mean, best way to start my day.
I hate that.
So I get to spend the first 3 hours of my morning just sitting in total silence, listening to the birds. I usually read. I'm reading Charlie Munger's Almanac right now. I love looking for unique, different perspectives that changes my view of things on the world. So yeah. I'm usually reading. I'll enjoy a nice cup of coffee. And I'll go on a run or I'll go exercise and then I'll come back. I'll cook breakfast. And so by 7 a.m., I love bringing my wife breakfast in bed. So I'll come back. I'll cook a big breakfast. We'll hang out for like 30, 45 minutes. And then I'll start my day at like 7:45, 8 a.m. in the morning. So I love my morning
time. I like that you do that. I decided a couple of years ago to start doing that, waking up without an alarm. I wake up so much happier.
So much happier.
But I don't wake up till like, I wake up at like 6:45.
6:45. Hey, that's not bad. It's each his own. You don't have to wake up early. Like,
okay, 6:45. Yeah. I'm gonna get up.
My problem is if I'm getting up at like 7, my phone's usually rolling at that point, and it draws the mind. You know, it's just nice to be able to just chill. It's like when I traveled over, I was in like Dubai, so I love going over there because it's opposite time schedules. Your phone is not blowing up during the day with a million things to do and fires like that. It's just a blissful moment in the morning before the crazy day starts.
I shut mine off. Yeah, I about 2 years ago, I just like, you know what? I hate waking up. Even though I have a nice alarm, it kind of jolts you awake. And I feel like it does sort of like, it puts me almost in a bad mood. Just like, like a noise. It's like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to train my circadian rhythm. And so I started doing that a couple years ago. And I wake up happier. I feel better. I just wake up and it's like, oh, okay, here's the day. So I always tell people all the time, if you can learn how to just wake up without an alarm, I feel like you wake up as a happier person.
Yeah, 100%. So you've noticed a difference in
Naturally,
Are you religious about going to bed at a specific time?
Well, mostly. But sometimes I'll get off on like watching some videos or something I should not do because of the blue light. But I have been known to stay up and binge TikTok videos. But usually I lay down at 10. I feel sleepy at 10.
Okay.
So I lay down at 10. My room is dark. There's no noise. Everything's quiet. Got my little humidifier. I just drift off to sleep. Yeah, I tell you. And I used to until I was like 62, I started doing that. And it really is amazing how much better you feel. Like you just feel like, okay, this is when my body wants to wake up. I get up.
It's indescribable. You can't experience in it until your body is actually caught up on sleep. Now, this is going to change. I currently don't have kids. I want kids. We're going to be probably trying to have kids here pretty soon. So I know that that's going to be a little bit of a shock to the system. But coming from somebody who was tired a lot, and you know, I took care of myself. When you get enough sleep, I'm telling you, it's a completely different life. And you can't describe what it's like to have like energy and like vitality throughout the day. And your sleep needs, my sleep need actually goes down. Like when I'm getting enough sleep, like I think I woke up at like 3:30 a.m. this morning and I went to bed at like 8:30. I took melatonin around 8, got in bed at 8:30, and I just naturally woke up. So the more you're able to give your body that rest, you'll find that you don't need like 9-10 hours on the weekend. I used to crash on the weekend. I would sleep in till like 9-10 a.m. on Saturdays and Sunday. I'd get like 10-11, sometimes 12 hours of sleep. And I'm like, cool, all right, I recharged. And then I'd go back to, you know, 5-6 hours of sleep a night, sometimes 7 on the weekdays, waking up, going to bed at different times. I mean, it really is a different life. I encourage everyone to try it. It just takes some discipline.
It does. Bill and I, my husband started, about 2 years ago, we started doing that. So we basically go to bed at 10 because I don't know. I'm not sleepy until then. And we both get up. He gets up early. He gets up at like 4. He wakes up. I don't know. Maybe a woman needs more sleep. He doesn't seem to need as much sleep. But once you really do that, even like when I travel, I've got to speak somewhere, I don't even set an alarm because I know I'm going to wake up. And it's honestly, and I tell people all the time, and you're right, unless people learn how to do it, they have no idea what they're missing. They don't.
They really don't. It's like a whole new world. Like you can't describe it. You just have to experience it.
And I'm happy to see you doing it in your 30s because I didn't start doing it until my 60s. I was like, with the alarm. It's like, the alarm. So now it's like, no more. All right. So tell me one more time. How do people reach you?
Yeah. So if you're someone who's interested in learning more about getting passive income, impacting those around you through unique real estate investments, basically building a legacy for yourself and your family, go to our website, hbgcapital.net. That's Harry Bob Gary Capital.net. I joked that the .com wasn't available, so is it a .net? You know, if you are interested in creating passive income and, you know, hedging against the current recession that we've got coming up, if you're interested in learning more about alternative investments, we've got a ton of free resources. There's a book that an ebook that I put together on that website called 100 Questions Passive Investors Should Be Asking Before Investing. The reason I put that book together is I got a call from one of our investors one day, and he said, "Brandon, my friend's in trouble. Can you help him? You know, he lent money to somebody. He lost his money. You know, can you hop on a call and just kind of see what, you know, what his options are?" I said, "Sure." And as soon as I hopped on, it became very clear that this guy was not going to be able to get his money back. He had invested with somebody he thought was reputable. They didn't do the paperwork right. Nothing was secured. It was very tragic. And basically, I was like, "Your options are to sue this guy, so and leave it up to the courts." But by that point, you know, the money's pretty much gone. And so I realized that had he lost his money because he didn't know what he didn't know. He didn't know what questions to ask before investing in something. And so that book, 100 questions that passive investors should be asking before investing, it tells every single question that you should be asking to vet an opportunity, not just the opportunity, but the sponsor itself. And I did that in the hopes that if just one person reads the book and it prevents just one other person from making that same mistake and losing that investment, that it would be totally worth it. So you can head to the website. We've got that book on there. We've got another free book, Recession Resistant Real Estate, kind of dives into all our different strategies.
Okay, so it's HBG.
Yeah, like Harry Bob Gary.
Because I transposed it up at the top of the page. So I just want to make sure so that when Glaze is doing my show notes, she didn't hear me repeat it and she says it right. Okay, HBG. You know what? The book with the questions is really good though, because 90% of the people that are fresh investors, they don't know. It's hard to find a reputable person to train you or mentor you or help you or coach you. And a lot of people just learn because they worked with somebody else that was like, you know, maybe not the best choice. And they learned by a bunch of mistakes. And I'm always like, listen, you're going to learn every single thing in your life. The mentors are mistakes. Mentors are cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Work with 100. Someone. And I love the fact that I'm going to go download the 100 questions. I'm going to see what they are.
Grab it. Grab it and share it.
I'm going to. It sounds awesome. Okay. So I always take a little bit of notes. And I just kind of like to review a little bit because we like the idea of getting into your mind and seeing, you know, what Brandon's all about. So that's why I like to call this session Inside the Minds of Today's Real Estate Investors, Today's Millionaires. Because everyone, I think, wants to ask you, like, how'd you start? What'd you do? I'm like, nah, they can find that stuff if they just look, Google you online. So you're in Nashville. You build entry-level house. You develop house. You build housing developments, correct? Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it, love it, love it, love it. You have a street named Cobb Sadoff Way. I think I said it right. Named after you and your partner. You're 32. You guys did wholesaling and flipping. You made $30,000 on your first deal. Then you started doing more deals. And you're like, hey, let's make a bigger impact. And got into what you're doing now. You were raised over in the Memphis. You did soccer as coaching and things like that. A little bit of a problem child, thinking out, doing things you shouldn't be doing. But it's okay. I think everybody did. You went into physical therapy for a while and realized, although you love physical therapy, paperwork was not your jam. And you did door-to-door sales, selling alarms, which is, I tell everyone, if you just get in door-to-door sales or any kind of sales for even 6 months, it'll change your whole life. Because you'll get over all the fears of being afraid to talk to people. And so you were 26-ish when you started getting into real estate because you were fired from a job that you loved and thought you were going to maybe go up the food chain on that food chain and said you made your own food chain. You like Blink 182. You like your green smoothies. You like the mornings. HBGcapital.net. And you have a great book there called 100 Questions Passive Investors Ought to Know.
That man, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Hey, I take notes. That's what I'm always like, taking notes. Well, that's good. So is that like a little bit about what's inside your mind?
That yeah, you did a pretty good job of summing up, and all these questions were completely unprompted. So it was like I had to reach for some of these things and really pull those memories out. You did a really good job.
No, thank you. I know people always sending me their questions, and I'm like, sure, you can send me your questions. I throw them away. I've had people say, like, did you get my question? I'm like, I did, but we're going to ask my questions. I just like to have more fun. Okay, so again, folks, you need to follow Brandon, HBG. I don't know why I have a tongue twist on that. HBGcapital.net. Get those 100 questions. I would download that. I would listen, read them. You know, when you have people like him and people like me, and we're really out here trying to help and help lead you down the right path so you don't make mistakes. We're all about the people versus the profit. You really can't do any better than that. Brandon also has a podcast, so listen to his podcast. And if you enjoyed today, I'm going to ask you to subscribe. And I want you to do me a favor. I want you to subscribe, and then I want you to like, and I want you to write a 5-star review. Because we podcasts are a lot of work, and we do them to help educate you and train you. And so all we ask in return is that you follow us, share it with other people, give us a few reviews, and that's how we grow and we build our shows. Also, if you'll go to Dwanderful, DwanDerful, Dwanderful.com, I have an ebook, Flip Your Way to a Fortune. It's about wholesaling. So good place for new people to start is start with wholesaling. So also, my darling, last thing. So I need you to give us a parting word of wisdom, but it can only be one word. It's going to be our word for the week.
Energy.
I love it. You're the first one that ever gave that word, energy. Okay, guys, the word of the week is energy. I think starting off with those green smoothies helps you with your energy, don't you think?
Yes. Yes, it does.
It does. Well, that's a really great word, energy. I love it. Well, I appreciate you. I thank you for coming on. I know your time is really valuable, so I appreciate you giving us some of your time. And everyone, check him out. He's adorable. Look how cute he is. And so got to follow what he's teaching you too. All right, guys, we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And remember that the truth is in the red letter. Ciao. Wow, wow, wow. How much fun did you just have? You listened to the most wonderful real estate podcast ever. Hey, do me a favor. If you love just one thing about the show, if you laugh, if you learn something, leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Don't forget, next week, same bat time, same bat channel.